So, I call the June 16, 2020 regular board meeting of Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
It is 7:01. Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Present, thank you.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdonk?
Here.
President Brooks?
Yes.
All right. Okay, Lisa, you're going to ask two questions. Yes, can all commissioners see and hear?
Yes.
Yes, that they all answered. Can all members of the public see and hear? I don't know how you're supposed to know if they can't, but we're required to ask this.
I can hear.
I'm sorry.
They can chat you if they can't.
Okay, there you go. Got Liz, thumbs up.
On it.
Okay. Okay. You legally have to ask this. This was a rule change this past weekend. So, are we okay, Jenny?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Alrighty. So let's move on to consent agenda items. A through C are routine. Recommended motion. Does any commissioner want any item pulled from the consent agenda items?
No.
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 No. Alrighty, so I entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda items as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, roll call vote, please. Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
Commissioner Covey?
Yes.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdonk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes.
Okay, motion passes. We will move on to matters from the public. It is our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. For our posted policy during the coronavirus crisis, all comments should have been submitted via email to Executive Director Lisa Shepherd prior to the meeting. Lisa Shepherd, please read any public comment received via email. All right, we received one public comment from Charles Sweet. That's Charles, S-W-E-A-T. We received that Monday, June 15th at 6:15 p.m. And here's what he sent us. The board packet for tonight's meeting includes an update on the Frank Lloyd Wright FLW cottage roof to Park 7N. In regards to the flooding issue highlighted in January by residents, it only says that soil testing continues. However, in the most recent village meeting, Scott Shore said, we did not anticipate the site being as wet as it is. And at Gooddale said that alleviating the drainage issue will come with a significant cost as the scope of the project has grown. GHS then asked the village to contribute $50,000 to this project, which was originally pitched as being no cost to taxpayers. By asking for a handout at a time that the village and parks are cutting budgets, GHS is displaying an incredible amount of tone deafness. The park district is now in a position where the drainage issue is uncertain, but they are almost ready to move the house. It appears that you are simply taking GHS at its word that the flooding issue can be addressed, but according to my FOIA request, there was no prior study of the flooding issue or preliminary plans made to address the problem. The park district needs to examine its termination rights under the lease agreement, as GHS has not addressed the flooding issue as agreed to in the lease. The board members should have alarm bells going off in their heads right now that this is under research, poorly planned project has gone off the rails. Thanks, Charlie Sweat. There's no other. Okay, okay. Is it?
Yep.
All right, so we will move on to the financial report. 3 months of the fiscal year are complete. Carol will now provide a synopsis of the reports.
As you can see in the, obviously the full impact of the COVID pandemic has now been realized and felt. You'll see by the May 31st financial month end, primarily for recreation, which is showing significant decrease in the net surplus due primarily to returning all 750,000 approximately to campers for the 2020 summer camp season. So we will, although we've returned the 750, the net that we budgeted for camp was about 365. So that full impact, again, will not be seen until after the summer months. And hopefully with the summer care camp and some other programs and moving into phase four later on this year, we'll begin to go in the positive direction of additional surplus. But we knew it was going to happen. I think just this month it really was very evident in camp, the camp refund. Daycare also is showing, again, after two full months of no revenues coming in, deficit at currently as of May 31st of a little over $120,000 in deficit. That compares to $82,000 positive last year, so that's about a $200,000 turnaround. Again, June financials will be a lot better for daycare, as now we're starting June 1. I think we brought in about $90,000 so far, and we'll see some additional payments, but again, that's being impacted. And then you see also added in your packet beach revenues, primarily. I would say half of that is probably for the boats, the boat department, and the other half is related to season pass sales, which we've done quite well. There is some wait list revenues, I can't money that I know we'll talk about later, but right now the beach is holding its own. So that's really all I have. I can go into further detail in my division report. I gave you an update kind of on our 12-month projection and based on that later on in this meeting. I don't know if anybody has any questions at this point.
I do. Carol, the recreation and daycare department changes were as expected, at least for me. Boating looks like it's boating at beach looked like it was substantially ahead of past years. Do I understand your comments to be that we're ahead because we collected a lot more season pass revenue than we normally have?
Yes. Typically, we would sell about 1,500 season passes, and we sold 5,000. Mm-hmm. So that primarily, you're correct, Josh. That's where it's coming from.
Is it too soon to say whether we might end up net basis at the end of the summer, kind of where we normally end up, or is it, you know, just I imagine that most of the cost that'll come in over the next few months is staffing.
Correct.
But do you have a sense of how we're likely to need the staff and therefore how good or bad the situation might end up in?
Typically we you know, we have salaried staff that are kind of expended throughout the year. We also have our overhead expense and the utilities. So at this point, I think we might have come close to breaking even or just under breaking even this year. I don't think that's going to happen. Typically in May and June, you know, we don't see the pass sales, and then come late July and August. And just for comparison purposes, we budget probably about $230,000 in daily fees and rentals that will not be realized.
Got it.
Through the course of the summer. So it's going to still, I think we budgeted a total deficit of about a right near $100,000, and we'd probably, you know, we might hit that this year.
Okay, thank you.
Questions?
Quick question about the Parks Department. We're actually a little better than I expected.
Yeah, I believe that's related to not doing some of the operational capital. I see Chris stepped away. also, he's had some, he lost a full-time person and now secondly a second full-time. So there are some staffing costs, but I think it's primarily due to not having the capital, and we didn't bring back the contractual mowers right away until June 1st. So there were some savings realized in the Parks Department.
Okay.
I would agree. Anything else?
That was very prudent. So, oh, there he is, Chris.
There he is.
That was very prudent of you. Good job.
Thank you.
Lisa will tell you what later.
Yeah. Walk away. Get asked questions.
Apologies. Nature called.
Okay. All righty. Wait a second. I'm searching out. Okay. Here we go. So, no other questions on Carol's report? I thought it was really complete.
Just a comment. We've come through so far amazingly well, as far as I'm concerned. Thank you, Carol, for having us have sufficient reserves to master the COVID.
Yeah, a pleasure. Carol, do you have an easy way for us to see sort of fiscal year-to-date, which happens to align, I think, pretty well with the COVID challenges, the overall loss in revenue and the overall the difference in revenue and difference expense related to COVID? Like, is it fairly, I'm trying to figure out if this is linear or not. Like, did we lose $3 million in revenue, but our costs came down by, you know, $2.4 million, so that our gap here is there? Is it something that's
It's really a little bit too early, I think, to tell that, Michael. I think the easiest synopsis that we can get is to look at that 12-month projection. But again, a lot still remains to be determined. Will we open up, you know, as expected in this fall? I don't know if we can really answer that just yet. So I think it's a work in progress from my perspective. But that 12-month projection, that I can discuss later out of the meeting, really does probably give some highlights.
Okay, what can you get a board pack of 186 pages? It's hard to remember.
Yeah, it's attached to my division report, so I will definitely touch on that under the division.
Later.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Anything else on this section? And I'm sure more of this will come up details later on in the meeting.
Yeah. No, I think it's, for what it's worth, I do think it's something that we should just keep an eye on so we understand, and the full year should probably help out.
All righty. So, if that is it for this, then we will proceed to discussion of fiscal year 2019-20, the annual audit report management letter. Carol will introduce Monica Adamski from Lauterbach and Amen, who will give a presentation followed by answering any questions from the board. Please review Carol's response to the audit report and management letter. The committee should reach consensus to have this item approved at regular board meeting tonight. Carol?
Yes, before I hand it over to Monica, who I do see here on the Zoom, I just want to give just an overview of the audit report. Is included in your packet, making up most of the 190 pages, I believe, Michael.
Yeah.
Along with the management letter, which really is nothing this year, which is always nice to see that there were no points pointed out, as well as it was an unqualified opinion, and also the SAS 114 letter that's included, which just were to notify you of anything out of the ordinary as well. I do want to say that we did have a great year, ending February 28th, 29th, I should say, before we had headed into this COVID time. And additional fund balance reserves that we did last fiscal year, over $300,000, will definitely help with this impact. But I will turn it over to Monica to kind of give a preliminary overview of the report, as well as answer any questions you might have. Monica.
Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me here today. And yes, please, I'm going to kind of go through the report, but if anything comes up, please feel free to interrupt me and let me know if you have any questions. I wanted to start off by thanking Carol and her team. It was, again, a very very clean, organized audit, which is always very appreciated on our end. I also wanted to congratulate the Park District. On the cover page, you got the National Gold Medal Award. That's fantastic. So kudos to everybody. That's a job well done. Wanted to bring that up. starting with the audit, so you do have a copy of that. I'm going to first start on page 3. That's going to be the page with the Lauterbach and Amen letterhead. And that's, again, what Carol mentioned. That is our audit opinion. And this year, the Park District did receive an unqualified opinion, which means that the numbers are what they say they are, and they are up to accounting standards. Following the opinion is the management discussion and analysis. I'm not going to go through that today. It's just, again, that's kind of an overview of the basic financial statements, but I do recommend if there's anything that you do want to look through in regards to the audit, I would flip through this, and this will give you a good understanding of what happened financial-wise within the fiscal year. Now, some of you guys are breaking out on me, so if something, just keep talking and I'll answer any questions. I'm sorry, just breathing
out. So far, no interruptions so far.
Okay.
Just keep going.
All right. If you want to look at page 12 of the financial statement, 12 and 13, this is going to be your government-wide financial statement. And as you will see on the bottom of page 13, that's your total net position at the end of the year. $29.235 million, and that is a 1.8 million, I'm sorry, increase from the prior year. Total assets and deferred outflows increased by about $150,000. However, on the opposite side, total liabilities and deferred inflows decreased by $1.6 million. And then I compared the two earlier today, and I noticed that a big portion of that was the IMRS. Payable at year-end last year was really high based on how the stock market, everything ended at year-end. This year was a lot lower.
What page do you want again? You said page 12 or 13?
12 and 13. Those are the government-wide, so that has your total assets, liabilities, and at the bottom of page 13 was your total net position.
Oh, yeah. Right. Got it. But we couldn't see the change year over year on this.
Yeah, I just compared prior year report earlier today, so I just wanted to bring up the number that the total net position did increase in a positive $1.8 million.
And you said that was mostly related to just to where the funds are in the market?
Yeah.
Or?
So a lot of it was an IMRF payable decrease compared to last year. The stock markets were better at the end of this fiscal year than last year. I know that was pretty high last year. Your assets increased, so it's a little here and there, but the big chunk of it was the IMRF.
Okay. Thank you.
If you want to start scrolling your paper to page 16. So these are your fund level financial statements. This is what the Park District budgets for on an annual basis. You can also see, I'm going to go all the way to page 18 because that's where your revenues and expenditures are going to be. So that's 18-19. And then you can see the difference, the net change in fund balance. So that's going to show you how your funds change individually from prior year to the current year. So all of them had a positive net change. Some non-major funds were negative, but it was a very immaterial thing. Any questions thus far?
What does RBP stand for?
That's your OPEB. That's going to be your OPEB liability, other post-employment benefits, so anyone who is on your insurance after they retire.
Got it.
That's the main kind of overview of your financials. Following the financial statements are your notes to the financial statements, and that is just a very, very detailed explanation of everything that the numbers that were in the front that we just covered. So again, if you wanted to read through that, that's completely fine. I don't think there's a point of going over all those. Usually after this is where I would talk about the management letter, but as Carol stated, there was no management letter this year, which is just absolutely fantastic. That means that there were no comments last year that had to be repeated this year, and no new comments this year. So again, kudos to Carol and the team. It was
Carol.
Amazing
about
it.
Very good.
That's great, Carol.
Yeah, very, very good. Very happy to work with Carol every year.
It was a little different this year because we really didn't see each other. It was all done via the portal, but it actually worked really well, I thought.
I wish all my clients did the portal the way you do the portal. it's been very difficult for some, I must say. It's just, you know, everybody's different, but it's been quite the ride since March. So
happy to help.
Thank you.
Right. Does anyone have questions for Monica?
Monica, thank you for the update tonight and for the report. Did you or your colleagues find any weaknesses in our systems that you believe are worth highlighting for us tonight?
We did not. So what happens is before field work, we come out and do preliminary field work, and that is when we test your internal controls. We check for sign-off, we sit down, we make sure that everything's followed, the procedures, you know, who approved, that there's dual controls, and we did not find anything that needs to be noticed.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. This is Dudley speaking. Is this document important for future bond issuance?
Yes. So they're going to ask you for your audited financial statements when you do bond issues. Yes. So for the most recent, yep.
Good.
Anything else for Monica? I guess this is one of those kinds of reports, Monica, that just kind of are easy to give and aren't a lot of difficult questions. Everything looks so clean and cleaned up. And probably going to look different next year.
Yeah, it's
going to
look a lot different next year, I think.
I think we should sort of savor it. Just,
I'm sure it won't be that bad. It's okay.
Yeah.
Nice when your fiscal year ends, you know,
before the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
True.
True.
Well, if there is nothing more for Monica, I guess we can say, Monica, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
I guess we will see you again next year.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you, Monica.
Have
a
good night.
Bye-bye.
Okay. So, Carol, as if you haven't done enough,
it's a Carol meeting tonight.
Yeah, it's all Carol every day, all day. Discussion. Of preliminary 2019 final tax extension. Carol, lead that discussion.
Yes, we did receive the preliminary report from the county, and in your packet is a summary, a one-page summary that we like to do for the board. As expected, because it was a reassessment year, our EAV did go up about $41 million. So one positive thing about that is also then does our legal debt margin as far as issuing debt. Our tax rate did go down. Typically, that's an inverse relationship that when the EAV goes up, the total tax rate goes down. The total EAV did increase about 4.6%. That's kind of typical for the reassessment. In the other years, we've shown a decrease, so it definitely, once it's reassessed, it jumps back up. There is no really related information on how the tax receipts are going to come in on the second installment. As you all know, they're billed typically August 1st, and this year they're going to delay any penalty on those until October 1st, so I anticipate we'll see delay. Typically, we see second installment receipts come in late July and early August for the bulk. For our projection, we did only put in an 80% collection rate, and we'll see how that goes. We'll see pretty soon here next month of how they're trickling in, but I don't know if anybody has any questions, but I just wanted to get this information to the board because I know typically this time of the year you do ask for information on EAV and tax rate.
You just remind me again, so the EAV stands for estimate or
equalized assessed valuation. So that's the total value of all property within the district.
So the percentage that we get from the tax bill, does that change the first installment to the second, or it remains the same?
Yes, the first installment, the county charged is 55% of the prior year taxes, and then the remainder, 45%, once the final tax extensions are known, then it's 45%. So the first installment is always much larger than the second installment because of that change in percentage.
Right. But the percentage that we take, the Park District takes.
Oh, of the total? Yeah. We won't know that until we know what the taxing rate is, but traditionally it's been right around the 7% of the tax bill in Glencoe for the park.
Okay. So the EAV doesn't affect that rate. That's not how it's set.
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
So getting that tax, that second installment in late, Carol, does that, how does that impact what you do? Is it just a matter of just kind of shuffling things around because we're going to, instead of getting it, as you said, in July, end of July, I believe you said, you get it, we're not getting it until October? Is that what you said?
Carol?
Hey, Carol,
I think I bored her to add to stone.
It's probably a cash flow issue more than anything.
So I'm wondering, I guess my question is that like create any kind of cash flow problem? Probably not.
It won't cause a cash flow issue.
Okay.
They're just not fining people until October. They're still collecting them at the regular schedule.
Exactly. So most of Carol was saying that most of the people she anticipates will pay on time,
right.
And so it'll be a small percentage they'll pay late.
Okay.
So the due date is what now? Is it August?
It was moved back to October.
No, the normal due date.
Oh, August. Yes.
Is August. But there are zero penalties if you pay up to October.
October, correct.
Okay. I imagine you'll have a fair amount of people that will pay in October because...
Because why not?
Why not? Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because normally the penalty is a lot. It's like $200 a day. It's crazy.
But I will say, I mentioned this last time as well, it'll be very interesting to see this conversation actually next year because the market is doing substantially better now. I think people are leaving Chicago and coming here. In fact, I think Carol is now back.
Sorry.
But I think your EAV is bound to go up pretty high. Quite frankly, I'm surprised to see a 5% increase in EAV. But
actually, for history, that's kind of low.
Really?
Compared to previous reassessment years. Lisa, to get back to your question, the fact coming in later, September, October, the fact that we're liquid and that we have staggered certain investments to mature in October, you really probably won't feel that impact. Thing is the bond payment, December 1,
right,
a little over $1 million, and so that should be no problem.
Okay.
Okay, so, Ms. Carol, I'm sorry, I think you mentioned this. What did you say your budgeting and collections to be?
80% for the second installment.
Sorry, one more time?
80%.
Yeah, which is really low, right?
Yeah. Even in the recession, it was still in the 90s. It was over 95%. So, we'll see.
I think what was it last year? What was the actual last year for the?
I think our collection rate was 99%.
I think I get over 97% this year. but I think we're picking up a little bit. And you've got a lot of new homeowners.
Yep.
All those deals that are closing now, they have to pay taxes at closing, right?
Any outstanding has to be paid.
Right. Yep.
Right.
And the value will probably go up with the sales. So, you know, that's all positive. Turnover of homes has been certainly positive for that. Okay. Any other thoughts or questions? Dudley, did you have anything?
Yeah, I just wanted to visit again the impact on our bonding. I guess I heard that it's not going to have an impact on our bonding because we have other sources of paying off our bonds.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah.
But we're not a hand to mouth, right? We have enough from reserves for
Absolutely.
A substantial amount of time that
Absolutely.
A delay, even of 2 to 3 months, I presume, Carol, you could probably go, you know, 6 or 8 months without collecting this, and you'd still be somewhat okay.
Yeah, I mean, the benefit of, as you pointed out earlier, Michael, that our fiscal year ended, and typically any excess fund balance reserves we would move into 169. That additional money is we're keeping in the operating funds until we know. We still might be able to transfer that at the end of the fiscal year, but I just don't feel comfortable doing that right now before we know really what's going on.
So, Carol, you do a sweep on sort of March 1st for excess funds from the previous year and put those into 69?
No, typically at today's meeting, I would say, you know, our fund balance reserves is 70%. Let's take that 15-20% and commit it to next year. I don't I'm doing it right now.
Got it.
But, yeah.
Okay.
You can always uncommit the money. We've never done that, and we're still in target to transfer from last fiscal year, that $1.5 million into Fund 69, so I'm still going to do that. We're still looking good.
You are going to move that?
Yeah, the 1.5.
Okay, Josh, did you have anything?
No, Madam President.
Okay, then, Carol, off the hot seat.
Nope, she's still on.
Oh, still on the hot seat.
One more.
His HR hat.
Oh, yeah, okay. We are now going to have our discussion of resolution authorizing benefit protection leave service for COVID-19 related furlough time. Again, Carol, take us.
Yeah. Away. So, as we had discussed probably a month ago, that we were going to pay staff only for hours work starting June 1, did an evaluation of those staff that we're not going to be having the hours for and would have to furlough them or partially furlough them, but we reduced their hours, what would they make for us. We ended up furloughing, I would say, 10 or 11 staff and sent the documentation to them. They know they can claim unemployment, but there is a handful of them that are actually participants in IMRF, and when they do not get any monies via wages, they do not get service credit for their pension. And so this resolution is put into place to allow them to buy their own service credit. As a park district, our employer contribution, it's not like we get a bill for it. It's built into our actuarial determination of what our contribution rate is. But for the employees, they literally will get what it's based on, an average of the last 4 years maybe of their service and their wages, that they will get a bill, and if they want to protect that, they would pay that and still have the service credit that would count towards their future pension. So this puts it in place. It does not mean that any of those people will do it, although I did have one of the employees, after she received her letter, reach out to me and was concerned that she would not be getting pension credit because she would be furloughed. And so she might very well do it, but it allows them to buy it for up to 12 months. And we're hopeful she will be back in the fall, but at least it protects her time in being off due to the furlough at this time.
Carol, remind me, I know we chatted about this at length previously, the individuals who are on furlough, this is not related to the act that allows you to not work if you or you're caring for someone with COVID. This is the people who, let me start with that one.
Yeah, the FFCRA is an act for people that are actively working. So some of the employees, either their position, ELC in May, they wouldn't be working camp, we didn't know if we were going to have camp, or they were working in the fitness center, which has been closed and until we reopen. So that's really what those people are at, part of the FFCRA. Now, if somebody that we have kept in...
Did Carol freeze and everybody else too?
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. It's just when she gets the juicy part.
I know.
I don't know where she is going with this one. Well, maybe you know, Lisa. The folks that were furloughed, I guess what I'm trying to understand is we did not provide them any choice. There's nothing they could have done. They said, you know, like we said, I'm sorry, there's nothing you can do. We have to furlough you. Or
yeah.
Are these folks that we said, hey, we'll find work for you, and they said, no, thank you?
Most of them, there wasn't adequate work for them to do, or they weren't suitable for that position or whatever. So that's why. So most of, we only had about 10 people that had a furlough. But some of those, we just didn't have enough work for them. And some of them are just partial furloughs, like they're half days. Like, so normally they would get 6 hours, they're only getting three, so they got a partial furlough. So that's about a handful of them for that.
So would they have to partially pay their way into the
service credit? Right? Yes. Then they would have to partially pay their way in. Correct. Any other questions?
I have a question. So, Lisa, you can take a shot at this if, or defer to Carol, but, oh, she's back.
She's so not here at home anymore.
She's not here last year.
Okay.
Get my money back.
Okay, now wait a second, because Josh, do you want to give her your question now? Because I know she was answering another question prior to this. Can you remember it, or do you want to just...
No, I can hold it.
Okay. Okay, Carol, do you remember what you were asked and what you were answering when we lost you?
No.
Okay, that Josh. Josh, and I think, Josh, was your question answered by Lisa regarding the furloughs?
You meant Michael.
I mean, Michael, sorry.
Excuse me. My question was answered. I feel comfortable with that, and I appreciate Lisa's answer and Carol's technological challenges.
Okay. Sorry. Josh, right. Here you go.
Carol and Lisa, I really perked up when I read the first paragraph of page 2 of the resolution. I'm not sure I completely understand what this means. So let me just make a statement and then ask you to elaborate on it. A lot of governmental entities have gotten in a whole lot of financial trouble by essentially promising people benefits but not paying for it today, right? The unfunded pension benefits that we've all heard about. And so when I heard we don't have any payment required, but the cost will be reflected in future contributions, I was like, whoa, that kind of sounds like unfunded. You know, I realize it may not be exactly the same thing, but I wanted to understand, is it kind of the same thing, and should I be concerned, or is there some reason I should?
No, we are a defined benefit plan.
Okay.
Our contribution rate every year, which right now it's 12.27% of all IMRF wages, that actually... down. It's based on a 5-year smoothing schedule. The amount that we're talking about for these employees, they're all part-time, all who make maybe $10,000 to $15,000. The impact to that will not be significant at all. And so, unlike the state pension plan, for the teacher's retirement plan. IMRF is stands alone as far as their financial ability to meet their obligations. They've been in existence for 80, I believe, so I'm not concerned by that at all.
Okay. Well, the state of Illinois has been in existence for more than 100 years, but it's a mess.
Yeah.
So that doesn't prove anything, but I accept your answer.
Thank you.
All right. More questions for Carol.
No one wants her to freeze again, so.
Yeah, quick, before she...
Yeah, hurry.
All right. Okay.
All right, so, Carol, go ahead. Sorry, I was on mute. You said you're going to, where is the 12-month view? Is that in a different section?
Coming up, I believe.
Not, yep, we're not in staff report yet.
Almost there.
I always forget the many hats that Carol wears.
Page 176.
Honestly, 176?
It's in the business department.
Well, I'll have to skip ahead that far. I gotta get to the part where people were painting the lockers at the beach 2 weeks ago. I want to see that staff report first. When I caught your team doing work, Chris.
I love that, when commissioners catch our team working.
Suddenly catch
those are the best calls and emails.
7:30 in the morning and they're out there painting. I was impressed.
It's not hot. You got to get the work done early.
Yeah.
They play good music.
That's Bill, probably.
Okay, so let us move on now to staff reports, and Carol, you're up first with business.
Okay, I'm going to jump right into the 12-month projection that is included on the back of my division report. Michael, this kind of gives the breakdown that you're looking forward projecting out as we know it right now. A couple of things that I've highlighted, you see the camp refunds coming out. In May, or over $700,000. You see a high for other rec programs starting in August, which is typically our fall. First day of fall registration, we would typically bring in $450,000, $500,000. I'm only putting in $200,000 right now until we get more information. The camp, due to take camps, it's in and out. We returned all the money and gave our portion. GJK. With what we know right now, we're still projecting but have fund balance reserves over 55%. And that's also taking into account the 80% collection rate for the second and stuff taxes.
That's the $1 million in August and $500,000 in
correct.
In $500,000 in September.
Yeah. So it still looks very healthy as far as fund balance. We're still in total over 50%. So I think it's a very positive thing looking.
I'll be damned.
But again, as we know, when we open up into 4 and 5, any questions on that, Michael?
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you went out for about 30 seconds. You may want to turn your video off and just talk to us, because that would be better for your bandwidth.
Carol?
Poor Carol.
Hold on.
And it's
phone.
Something with it going in and out.
There we go.
Carol, I don't have the number. Honey, what's the number?
Oh, the phone number? No, we can hear you now.
Yeah, now your video's off.
Your video's off? I'll email it to you, though, Carol, in case you need it.
Are you there, Carol?
I'm calling in.
Okay. He had Comcast out this week. I can't imagine how angry she is right now.
Oh, AT&T she had out.
AT&T, like she's going to be hostile with them on the phone tomorrow.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, we've been giving her a hard time all week.
All week. We're like, get this fixed.
Carol, I have somebody that can help you out tremendously with this. I got my whole house wired for, with those Unify things. My house is really old, and it's been phenomenal for the past 4 years.
She'll come to the district next month.
Okay, I am so sorry.
Okay, here you are.
Okay, so you expect your revenues to be at about 11.6. I see you kept daycare relatively flat starting in September, like you were saying, but that's, is 140 what you normally get on average?
For daycare.
Yeah, Bobby,
it's about 135, 140.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's a big line item that we kept flat, and that's that one could shift a little bit. And then ELC you also kept flat at about 30 to 32, I presume? Mm-hmm.
Correct.
Yeah, those are pretty optimistic scenarios, I think, to some extent, but... This is good for us just kind of to see what the world's going to look like, I suppose. So we budgeted, is the right column the 2021 budget versus the total columns, the actuals, or what we anticipate?
Correct.
So it's like what we would call forecast versus plan?
Projected.
Projected versus budget.
We're looking at a sort of a 1.6 million bad guy, if you look at it this way, right? 9.2 over 10.8.
Say that again.
If you look at the total revenue of 9.26 or 9.3 million, and you look at your total expenditures of 10.9 million, this is all OpEx, right?
If you're trying to compare total fund balance operationally, you would look at the 7.7 that we start with, and we're going down to a little over six million for operations.
Yeah.
And that also includes the 1.5 million that we're doing to Fund 69.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty big, right? It's not sustainable. Unless I'm missing.
Well,
why do you think it's not sustainable?
Well, your operating fund balance starts at 11 million and you end at 6 million. Yeah, right?
No.
No.
No. That's, you're comparing revenues with expenditures.
Yeah, I'm comparing ending fund balance operating. Starts at 11.2. How am I not comparing this correctly?
Well, it's like 6.5 was budgeted, right? And just above 6 is what the forecast today. Can you point us to the particular cells you're talking about, Bob?
You want me to share my screen?
Share your screen.
Yeah, Lisa, it's disabled. Jenny?
Yeah, Jenny, it's disabled.
Should it be?
Carol, you and I can chat tomorrow or the next day.
Yeah, it's much easier.
I don't want to waste everyone's time on this. Everyone else sees it.
No, I mean, your question is good. I think clarifying this for everyone is useful.
Okay, Chris, give it a go.
I mean, I guess you've got the fund balance you're going to shift over into it at some point.
Right, the 1.5 million coming out.
Can you see that, Carol?
Yeah, look at the Fund 65 to 69 transfers. There's almost 2 million going into our capital fund.
Oh, I see that. There's 1.5 million in June.
Right.
And
whoever, can you point to that?
1.5 million in June is coming out. Mm-hmm. But even without that, if you were to put that back in, your ending balance would be at 7.5. And I guess I'm trying to reconcile how we began at 11.2 and end up at 7.5.
Carl, this is what you had budgeted, right, to be fund balanced? right here?
Correct. We brought in 300,000 more than fund balance.
Right.
February 29th. So typically we bring in 50% tax revenue, 50% program fees and user charges. So
right.
That
so,
$5 million is coming from program fees. Also, though, you need to look at the net because just like camp, you're seeing 700,000 go out, but we only budgeted a net of 365.
Right.
Yeah, I think I'm going to try and put in my head one more way. February
Stephanie, do you have anything for Carol?
Okay. I do not.
Okay. Very good. Then let us move on to Bobby Collins.
All right. It's been a busy month, a lot going on. I'm sure you saw that we were able to tell Sailing and Aquatic families that we're going to be running that camp. So positive news with that. So we'll start with session four and go through session nine and look at other options, see if we can extend the season further. We are also looking at contingency plans for September if there's anything going on with the schools where we can potentially use that facility too. But it's all based on staffing. Chris's team, even though they were short staffed, worked with Matt to add 20 additional paddleboard spots this week to try to free up. We found some free space where we were able to put them. It is worth noting that we still have a wait list on lockers, so people are being let off the wait list for paddleboards only right now, and they will get lockers when they become available. We are repurposing some pretty old lockers that need a refresh behind the boathouse. So the team is trying to be creative to try, because that wait list has expanded massively over the last 3 to 4 weeks, as I'm sure you all are aware. So we should be able to add at least 18 people off that wait list this week, which will be probably about a $5,000 increase in revenue too, but also give the opportunity for mostly our residents, because they get priority on the wait list to get out of the water this month. So that's really positive. Thank you to Chris and his team and Matt for making that happen. Summer care, we have 16 enrolled in the preschool summer care, which is the full day option, and we got 35 in the youth. We don't have a wait list on any of those. We know what we're doing with Children's Circle in terms of participants. We've had 12 drop, but we've been able to fill all those spots from the wait list. So by the 6th of July, we should have 99% of people back. There is 5 people who are doing the 50% for the summer, so they'll start back after the summer. We have 9 brand new students on the waitlist starting July 1. So a little more regularity to Children's Circle, kind of pretty much almost back to full operation. So that's exciting. Going very smoothly. Jeff and Amanda, you know, doing a great job. We've rolled out a significant amount of outdoor programming over the last couple of weeks. We have over 400 people enrolled in programming, most of which is outdoors in the month of June. We're looking to do the same in July. Some of the stats we have is we have over 100 in our youth outdoor sports programs and sports track. We have 23 in our theater program. We've had almost 60 people in our outdoor fitness classes, which we just rolled out for mostly for adults. We have over 60 in our youth tennis program, 20 in our adult tennis, and we have over 60 in our basketball clinics, which are happening at our basketball courts. Deck hockey has 46 people enrolled. You might know that that's the new amendment we added at Watt. So I have to say, Adam and Shannon have done a phenomenal job with rolling out in-person outdoor programming overnight. A lot of guerrilla marketing, a lot of email sent to groups. With Aaron obviously off, everybody's been picking up the slack. So I'm so proud of the team. Over $50,000 worth of programming created in the space of 2 weeks for the month of June. And we'll look to keep doing that in July and August. And I know the team we were talking today is working on contingency plans for September with what happens with the schools. So really, really, really proud of the team. I'm glad they're on my team with the amount they've been doing. So a lot of really good things going on there. Anybody got any questions for me on my report?
Hopefully just a question. What's the waiting list look like for Children's Circle now?
You know, it's right now, I don't want to give you it until we kind of see where it settled down, because it is the start of a new year. We kind of had cleared the wait list and told everybody you weren't getting in before this had happened. So we reached out. So I would say it's still pretty significant. But we'll see after September 1. So I'll give you a more accurate number, because basically they have to find somewhere to go in September.
Yeah.
So
there still is a wait list, right?
Yes. But generally what we do is we start it again afresh in September as everybody graduates into a new class. So yes, you are correct. We also have parents who are expecting, who are on the wait list, but they don't have a child as we speak. So the wait list is a pretty complicated process, so we'll have a much better indication September 1. But I would expect it to be pretty healthy considering the amount of daycares that have closed. We're still getting a lot of people reaching out to us.
Bobby, is it on your radar to take advantage of that situation to see, like, how could we expand Children Circle? Are there additional rooms that we could use? Are there things that we can do if we're not doing fitness or karate? Can we use those rooms? Are there things that we're thinking about?
Yeah, I think doing a similar program with Children's Circle will be challenging due to the licensing, but there is other options we're looking at. I can see ELC being popular. We're also going to be looking at things like school day off programs and preschool day off programs and adding nature programs and additional options for parents, and we'll use every square foot of what we're allowed to use. Children's Circle is very restrictive, and it's really hard to get additional programs because of the restrictions from DCFS, but we will be looking at every option. We already are.
Thank you. That's awesome. There's a lot of, if I speak for myself and Stephanie to some extent, there's a lot of parents out there with kids under, let's call it 12 or 13, that are really looking for activities, things to do, ways to be socially, ways to be safe and sort of entertain and forward. So it's great. Thank you.
Bobby, is it policy now that you can call and get on the wait list? Because I know families that are expecting children that have called before COVID and the wait list was essentially closed, which is a very frustrating answer to have because you feel like you just want to get in line to get your ticket, you know? So is that just, that's gone and now you can call and get on the wait list?
For some of the rooms, that may be the case in the fall, like some of the older kids who haven't come back and that wait list is reduced. But for the infant room, we're not going to be taking people until July next year. That's probably at the earliest.
Wow.
Because we already know parents who are, you know, expecting and when those kids would grab. Because we've just taken in, I think, 4 infants this week. So they're not going to be moving out for 12 months, which is going to be bringing us to new infants starting July next year.
And these are families that are already part of the program.
So existing families get moved ahead of non-existing families.
Sure.
So that's right now, if you're not an existing family, it's very unlikely that you would get a spot while you have an infant.
Right. Okay.
By the way, we do have a second infant room open right now because we were able to use some of the summer rooms which are in the licensed wing, and that's temporarily the case until the kids in the current infant room move out. So we were able to be flexible and do that with DCFS, but it's only for a couple of weeks / maybe a month.
Right. And you'd run into the same problem if you spread out into other rooms because eventually those rooms would need to go back to their original use. So, yeah, okay. Any other questions for Bobby Collins? Anything at all? I have to say I've seen a lot of young people and not as young people out there playing disc golf, and I've seen a lot of kids on deck hockey just walking by, you know.
Tennis has been extremely...
Tennis, waiting lines for tennis.
Bobby, I did go to the office yesterday. I took a train in, and I walked by the awesome basketball court, you know, under the glass thing. Mm-hmm. There are like 5 or 6 kids out there. Every time I walk by, there are kids out there. People are really taking advantage of the parks. It gives me a lot of pride to say what an awesome job you guys are doing on maintaining them. So,
thank you.
Chris.
I can't wait.
Chris. Oh, it's my team. And tomorrow we're going to be or this week, I should say, not going to happen tomorrow, but we'll be installing the nets on all the tennis courts. So we'll open up even more. So we'll take it. Right now we have an empty court between them. We'll be putting all the nets up.
GBA is starting up pretty soon. That's good.
That's correct. Yeah, I think they were starting last weekend. AYSO is starting up the 22nd, so that's next week. A lot of the affiliates have been reaching out, so things are kind of getting back to normal time.
you know, we talk about communication a lot, and the communication during all of this, during the pandemic, has been really great. I have the kids signed up at many different places, and the communication hasn't been as good, so I think that's a...
It's very, very challenging for the team, so good to hear.
Yeah, so we are going to roll out, Michael had the great idea of doing the FAQ for the beach, so we're, and then Lisa followed up going, wow, that really worked out well. We should do it for some other programs, too. So we're going to look at doing that for other programs as we advance those programs this summer, too.
I cannot tell you how helpful that's been. Three people have asked me about stuff, and I was like, look, you can read it online. You can get my answer, but, like, it's all out there. Check out this question. I thought the Oswald Brand question was answered really, really well.
Yeah, I agree. That was so particularly well done.
Yeah.
Really, honestly. Whatever group of people you had sitting down and doing that, it would be very nice to see that for lots of other issues as well, even our, you know, the new projects that we're doing. So.
Yep.
That's good feedback, so we appreciate that.
Why is the splash park open? Look, it's not us. It's the governor. It's not until phase four. So it's a consistent voice from us, and I think that was really well done. And you guys did it really quickly, too, so appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
That
was a great idea.
Yeah.
Very good. If nothing more for Bobby.
One more thing.
Yes, Steph.
Right, Steph.
Go ahead.
For the fitness center, you guys sent that survey out, and part of the survey was asking people if you're going to have, like, private sessions in the gym. Is that going to happen? I might have missed that in communication, but I didn't see anything.
Stephanie, we're going to talk about that under my report. So you can put a pin in that, and we'll talk about that in just a few minutes.
Okay.
Thank you. Very good. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, what I was thinking is that we're really trying to take the aerial view of this, is what we're trying to do, I think, is protect the community, but at the same time provide the maximum amount of park and recreational services as we possibly can within the envelope of the state permission. And I think that's a good message to send our residents.
Very well said, Dudley. Absolutely, Dudley.
Lisa, is the change in the spacing of the tennis courts based on some changed guidance from the state or the
USDA? More clarification from the state. When they put out some things, they're not always clear, and then they come back later and clear it up. And we saw that last Friday at 9 o'clock. They made clarifications to swimming and pools and beaches. So we're constantly, IEPD is working on our behalf to get certifications for some of that. So that was just a recommendation to do every other court, not a mandate. So most of the North Shore districts have went ahead and done every court based on demand and our residents properly social distancing on the court. So we felt we could do it also.
Okay.
Okay, so let us move to Parks and Rec, Chris Liner.
So as everyone mentioned, the parks are kicking. So people are out in the parks everywhere. It's a very unique time. We're working on getting things spooled up for AYSO and GBA, which is a little bit unique because it's finally a little bit of dry weather here. So that's aided us. We've got our mowing contract and horticulture contracts back on track. So you'll start to see a little bit more frequency on some of the more out there parks on getting mowed. We should have everything in the entire system mowed now every week. So if you guys do hear anything, please send them my direction. Every park is meant to be mowed every week right now. So we're just working with the contractor, getting them started up. We've seen some major improvements in the front of Thinkit Center, the Green Bay Rhode Island, some of the areas that we care for are really starting to pop and look like they're supposed to look. So that's been good to see. I've been working on closing out the halfway house and the Thinkit Playground. So we held back on closing out the playground until the spring here because we wanted to make sure we weren't paying for dead landscaping. So we are going to be getting about 60% of all the landscaping replaced on the playground here in the next 2 weeks before we close out the project. You may have noticed on the halfway house, we got the roof completed. We're moving to punch list. But the very very exciting news is we opened our bid for our trail on June 12th. So this is where we have the drum roll. As you may recall, the original estimate was $1.2 million, which we then revised to $900,000 once we made it through the design process. Well, our bid came in at $775,000.
Great.
So we really lucked out based on kind of the local bidding conditions and things of that nature. So we do expect that that's a very, very, very tight bid. So we will see some changes along the way. But again, it's it was really good to see that, you know, our bid came in right off the bat at about $125,000 less than we thought, and nearly $425,000 less than we'd originally planned. So that's going to be great news. We're looking to likely start construction around Labor Day. So we're doing kickoff meetings shortly with the village and the contractors and the state. So very excited about that. Very excited about that. So it's been a wild ride, and going into that in a pandemic, not knowing what you were going to get, was definitely probably one of the most tense bid openings of my entire career, because I couldn't attend it because it was closed because of COVID. Yeah. So I had to wait until they updated the website, and I was like sitting there clicking refresh, you know, for about a half an hour period. Finally got the information. So we're excited to move forward with the project. It is of note that we're working on spooling up playgrounds now. We don't know when the governor is going to allow people to use playgrounds, but we don't want there to be a significant overlap of when all our surrounding communities open and we have to get things ready. So you probably will see staff out in the parks working on playgrounds, especially the high-profile sites, Woodlawn, Friends, Shelton, things of that nature, to make sure everything's ready to go when that restriction is lifted. Any questions?
I have one question for you that I probably should have asked before. About 6 to 8 months ago, we had the village come and talk to us about Writers Theater. What's that? Writers
Theater Court?
The court, yeah.
It looks like, obviously, the village has gone through with that. Do we have any expenses associated with our land there? Do we have any village?
Not at this time.
Not this time. They're taking out the road as part of the project that has no cost to us. They'll reseed it, so it'll be just basic parkland.
And then we have to maintain that going forward?
With the board, yes.
That was one question. The other one I still don't quite understand how the bidding process exactly works. Chris, did you get, you got multiple bids for the...
Correct.
Okay, and it was...
So, go ahead, sorry.
No, you go.
No. I can explain the process if you'd like, or if you have specific questions.
But there was the lowest bid came in at $775,000. Is that
correct?
What were the next bids? Just out of...
That's interesting. So the state doesn't disclose that information. So the way it works is they're pre-qualified bidders. So it's a list of companies that the state basically says you're allowed to do this work. And only the pre-qualified bidders can bid on it. They don't typically make public the other bids. It's part of their process. We may find that out as we go, but that's just kind of the way that this IDOT works at this point. So.
I don't love Illinois.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, there's significantly more oversight on this project because it's IDOT involvement in federal money than any project that we've ever undertaken at the Park District. So, I mean, it really, literally, the contractor gets paid by the square foot for what they complete on a daily basis. It's very tight.
And they get paid from IDOT, right?
Yes, that's correct. And IDOT will then bill us.
Well, hey, look, nice job, guys, on getting done. And, you know, I know we keep going over our red, green, yellow, orange worksheet, giant piece of paper. The fact that we're going to have a couple $100,000 extra to deal with some other issues is really, really valuable to the taxpayer at the time. So I appreciate
that. That thought had certainly crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you. So we're really pleased with the outcome.
So as fate would have it, this is a good time for the project for a lot of reasons.
Well, we'll say that when it's done.
Well, not only because of the grant money, but because the economic
grants and donations and end up being a great project. So.
Yeah, it's really worked out great.
Yeah. Okay. Any other questions for Chris?
Thank you.
Josh, anything? Not now. Okay.
No, thank you.
All righty. So, let us move on to the executive director's report. Lisa, will you review the items in your report?
All right. I'm not going to go over in a lot of details because I'm sure you've read it, but there are some topics that we need to discuss so that staff can have more feedback from the board to move forward. One is that our plan is not to do a brochure this fall. Instead, we're going to do more of an online version because of the ever-changing status of COVID-19. We feel it would be a gigantic waste of money if we developed the brochure and then mailed it out, and then none of those programs run. So that is our plan moving forward, so you will not see a fall brochure. You'll see more of an electronic version. It may end maybe monthly, who knows. Constantly evolve as the situation evolves and you see how what phase we're in at what time. The next one is the beach. Currently we have sold 5,000 beach passes. We have about a little under 350 on the wait list, which equates to a revenue of about $20,000. We have found as of right now the beach is very manageable, but we also put that caveat in there that school had just let out. We just started getting into the hot days. We noticed that a lot of our beach members are going and trying to set up their spots closer to the water. So you may see some clustering going on and doing our best to keep them socially distanced. But at this time, and I believe staff recommend that we would raise that beach pass limit to 6,000, knowing that probably by July 4th, that will dry up as any more season pass holders come in. And the reason is, but you have to, with that recommendation, the board has to be okay with that there may be a couple days that there may be a wait to get in. We have set up a method that once we get to 80%, we're going to put it on our website so patrons can go and check that. And we will communicate that with our season pass holders. So anytime we get to 80%, we'll advertise it on the website and our rainout line saying we're at 80% this time. It's important to note even on the hotter days, I guess and Bobby can speak to this, we've had about not over 600 people come to the beach throughout the whole day. So what we're finding is with season pass holders, it's a lot different than our daily users. Season pass holders tend to come for an average of 90 minutes and then leave, where our daily pass holders in the past, especially on the weekends, would come and make a day of it. They'd come in the morning and not leave until the end of the evening. When you have a season pass, you can come whenever you want, so there seems to be they come, they stay for 90 minutes, and they leave. Yeah, with the wait list, we've had Bobby's getting a lot of phone calls. When are you taking me off the wait list? When are you taking me off the wait list? So those are residents. There's non-residents on there also that are looking to get in the opportunity to experience the beach. And since we haven't seen a massive overcrowding on the beach, that would be our recommendation. So, Bobby, do you have anything to add to that?
We've had 8 days where we've had over 500 people attend the beach in one day. I think the top day was 655 people throughout the day. We're really seeing it between 10 and 1, and then really falling off the cliff later in the day after, say, 4:35 o'clock.
Bobby, it's probably hard to say because they don't all come at one time, but how many people in a day do you think puts you at the point where you're asking people to wait?
Question.
So it's a great question. So what we've been tracking is those busier times, it's about 40 people an hour is coming in. So I think when we get to the point where it's 80 to 100 people an hour and they're staying an hour and a half, that's where we might hit that roadblock. I really see it being kind of July 4th being potentially the crazy day, and later in July, beginning of August. So we may get to that point. We have not got to that point yet. We have found that there's quite a bit of space further west on the beach between the sun shelters and kind of the first 25 to 30 feet by the water's edge. There's plenty of space for anyone who wants it. We added a lot more tables and benches, which has allowed people to spread out. So we're cautiously optimistic that we're going to be able to handle that and manage the crowds okay.
And as we move into phase four, then there's a
ability to have more people closer together.
Right. That's a good point.
We're also seeing people use the boats, the north beach, the boating beach, more, as I'm sure you've seen, and spread out over places they normally wouldn't spread out over the beach.
I just don't understand why people are thinking we're going to move into Hayes Ford in the summer. Is that what people think? Yes.
Every statistic in Illinois is heading that way. So even, I will tell you, I think we are. If I look today, I'm a numbers guy, you look at the IDPH awesome website, thank you, Chris. Every single day, testing is either going up or it's flat. Today it was down like slightly. Number of cases is coming down 20 to 25%, and deaths are coming down about 30% week over week. Illinois is trending in the right direction, so it wouldn't surprise me if you see us going that way. It's a revised phase four. Like, I don't know if it's going to be 50% of restaurants or something like that.
Because I look at the data for the states that have moved into what we would call phase four and what's happening in those states.
But they never closed down.
No, I'm talking about the states that are behaving in a manner that we would behave if we moved into phase four and what's happening.
Right, but a lot of those, my point is a lot of like the Texases and Arizonas went into those phases. There are some people that say they went into prematurely and they never really had that closed down. But anyway, we'll look up and figure that out. But I do think we're going to be in phase four this summer.
So I would say this is one of those things I would look to staff to determine because you've got the feet on the ground and you have a better sense of not only from questions and complaints coming in, but a sense of what you could expect if things get really busy. The one thing I would caution is that we have no, as you would say, data to show us what a hot weekend day with school out might look like. And I have concerns about season pass holders who decide to go to the beach and then get stuck in a line and just dealing with that. So that's a significant concern for me, but I would look to you to make the recommendation, and then I would agree with your recommendation.
And I'm not going to lie, so that's a definite worry for us, but then you look at it, are we denying, especially these 400 people on the wait list, the ability to go to the beach all summer long because we're worried about 5 days where they may have to wait for half hour to hour. So that's where a little bit of our thing is.
Sure.
You know, most of the days are manageable, and we're not gonna lie, there may be some days like that will be a challenge, and hopefully with that communication that we can get it out that there is we're getting close to capacity, they may change people's behavior and they may come later. So hopefully we're trying to do that. But I'm not gonna say that people won't be mad. But we also have people calling up Bobby yelling, why am I on the wait list? So either way, we want to these people and say, we're not gonna expand it, we're taking off the wait list if they stop calling, or we say, okay, we're gonna take more, and then, you know, we're pretty much sure it's gonna even out where we're not gonna take any more because the summer's halfway over. They really want it when they have forgotten it by July 4th.
Okay,
Josh? Sorry, Lisa, go ahead.
No, I was going to just start eliciting comments.
Thank you. Along the lines of communications, like we've been talking about, I think it would be smart, if possible, to email the season pass holders, for example, at 3 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, if we know that it's going to be above 80 degrees. Or above, you know, it's going to be hot over the next 2 days, and say, you know, we want that this waiting might happen, and we would suggest, if possible, that you come before 11 or after 3, or you consider that, or
be prepared, right?
Be prepared in case you're asked to wait.
Yeah, absolutely.
We could definitely do that.
I'd like to echo that. Yes, I want to make sure that when people sign up for the passes, that they're aware of the possible restrictions. The other thing I like to do is compliment staff. I've had the chance to see them on the beach, dealing with sometimes very irate people who would like to go on the beach without the benefit of the pass, and they've handled it very well. It's one of those areas where I think they do need continued support and training. Some of them, I'm concerned, are going to burn out a little bit on that issue. The other thing, I saw a little picture in the a paper the other day about how they had what I'll call visiting circles in Central Park. Now, I know that we draw circles in the sand for people, but I hope that we have some, at least a mental picture of how we can help people maintain that social distancing, and also for emergency access. Heaven forbid we have to bring down a fire company down there for some kind of emergency services. Can't have them tripping all over people. Just wanted to say that that could be something to look at.
Well, Dudley, that's always been, on the beach, it's always been the possibility. Usually we have 1,000 people down there, so we've always had the ability to get public safety down there as quickly as possible. We've talked in great length about putting up circles or different spots like we've seen done at other parks. It's not possible on the sand, obviously. We can't take it out every day, all the places. We have the beach cleaner and stuff. So the staff does their best as they can to ask groups if they get too close to someone to please move over. Again, that's a very touchy subject for some people. So they do the best they can on that particular instance.
Is there a reason we have to say a number? We're never going to please everybody, and there's people that, you know, a lot of comments I hear, the beach is like their sanctuary because they feel safe there and it's not super crowded. I know there's people on the wait list who would say differently. They say, I'm a resident and I should be able to use my beach, and I'm sure you get those calls every day. So I know it's not easy for you guys at all. You said we have 350 people on the waiting list. Why not just to fill the waiting list? Obviously, these are the people that really want it, have contacted you, have put themselves on there, and then kind of wait until after July 4th, because you know you're going to have a crowd to raise the number. Just my 2 cents. I'm worried about July 4th. You know that's going to be your... I'm sure that's always one of
the
water
times.
And so, why put a number to it if you don't have those people calling you on the wait list, to show the wait list and then see how it goes?
We could do that again, and then we'll just build the wait list back up, and at least we'll be able to tell people that we're not going to add any more until after July 4th.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can sell as many season passes as you want after September 10th.
Yeah, we sure can.
So then is everyone in agreement? Actually, Stephanie, I like that idea, is that we have a one-time reprieve for the wait list, allow those people who've been waiting off the wait list, and then start building a wait list, and we will consider more later as we get past some hot weekends and maybe July 4th. What do you think about that?
I like Stephanie's.
Okay.
It works.
We're going to do that then. Okay, perfect. Thank you for the feedback. That's great.
Bobby, I've heard from some parents who have teenagers working at the beach that potential patrons have told them to F off a couple times. I'm sure that's happened to more than one person. How bad is that problem, and has Matt been able to keep morale up and, you know, not teach any teenagers any new words?
I'd say you do get some of that. Anytime you approach anybody asking them to do something right now, it seems like they don't want to do it. I would say that it's happening a couple of times a day for sure. But it's not happening so much on the beach, it's more happening up on Park and Hazel. So we've had more of our veteran staff up there, more full time staff. You may have seen Adam and Shannon and Liz on the call, has filled in countless days down there.
I've seen Adam there.
Being there, everybody's been stepping up massively because we understand, Dudley, to your point, we are worried about staff getting burnt out. It's a tough job being in the sun, being yelled at. So we're trying our best to make sure we rotate staff through, and thank them for being there, because it is a thankless job at the end of the day, and the only reason we're really able to be successful is because of those positions.
Mm-hmm. Very true. I was down there today, and because every time I go down there, I ask them, okay, you know, tell me what happened today, and they said it was a little, it's been a little better the last couple of days, that people are starting to understand that we're not selling daily passes, so I'm sure we'll still have a few days, rough days, like 4th of July will probably be a rough day, and we'll have our season staff there that day also. But, you know, it is hard for them, so I appreciate you realizing that. And then they are doing a phenomenal job and trying to give them as much support. And I always tell them, I'm like, it's not personal, it's just a situation.
We don't hesitate to call public safety
if we need to.
We're trying to encourage staff not to engage with people. So, you know, if the situation occurs where you're feeling uneasy, you know, a lot of them, we ask them to park their car near where they're going to be stationed, if the parking master's to get in the car and they can call the police. Or I would encourage those parents to encourage their kids to talk to Matt. Matt's done a very good job at de-escalating situations down there. So keep encouraging them to seek more senior leadership to de-escalate situations.
You know, honestly, these young people are having, you know, it's a very good experience for them. Because to be, as Michael has turned it his mouth, to be confronted by the occasional angry constituent is, and learning how to handle and manage conflict is something that most young people don't have experience with ever. So if they're modeling their behavior after Bobby's staff, Matt staff, they're learning a lot, because I see them in action, I've seen them in action, and I know it's not a pleasant thing. I talked to a young man who was at the park entrance, and he was just such a nice young guy, and he said he really didn't like conflict. Well, but you know, you're doing good and you're learning something. It was just such a cute guy, and he was doing his job, because as I said to them, it's a great thing to have a job this summer. It's going to look really good when you go to look for work. But you found a job this summer and you worked.
Yeah.
So, you know.
It's important to note that the beach hasn't always been a cakewalk. The beach has been known to have very, it's actually, what's happening is some of the struggles that we used to have with daily pass holders are actually kept on top of the bluff instead of below the bluff. So the beach has never been a cakewalk as far as enforcing rules and things like that. And so the staff has always been trained with conflict resolution. It's more elevated this year just to do this situation. I mean, people just get mad. I was out there talking to staff, and I had my mask on, and I require them all to wear masks if anybody gets within, like, 6 feet of them. Mm-hmm. And someone would just start yelling at, why are you wearing a mask? And just ridiculous things like that. It's like, well, you know, like, it's, why does it hurt you if they're wearing a mask? We didn't ask that. If they didn't have a mask on, we would prefer people to, but we didn't get into altercation with them. He just came by and started yelling at us for wearing a mask. So that's the kind of thing. They're just mad at the whole situation, and what they perceive as their right to take away. So for that, I was glad I was there, and I just said, when they do that, just let them go. Just don't engage. Don't say why you're doing it. But just keep yourself healthy, so, of course.
You know, I think it's important to note that a lot of people are saying thank you.
Yeah.
That's true.
I mean, there's been a couple of days where people have approached me and said, thank you so much for being open. Thank you for being here. We have nowhere to go. So there is a lot of positive feedback that's being sent our way as well.
And this is a great one. We got this from Eileen Serkin. I'm saving it. I think I'm going to frame it. It says, I am so impressed with how Lisa and her staff are handling this crisis. So you have some really residents who have never bought a pass before. And she said, I've never bought a pass, but I want to support the park district because we're so impressed how you're handling everything. So stuff like that is, you know, just great to see it. So we are getting the positives, as Chris said. And this is going to be framed.
We're going to move on
to the next topic.
Okay, we will. Someone was saying something, but I'm going to shut them. Was someone talking?
Okay.
Michael.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, we're going to move on to the fitness really quick. So, as Stephanie alluded to, we did send the survey out to all of our fitness members, and Bobby's going to pull that up on this here today or talk about it really quick. So really, what I want to do is before we go over the survey, is talk about the survey and then we'll talk about the cost to operate the fitness center if we ever get into the phase where we can open. Again, we're trying to be proactive so when the restrictions lift and the fitness center is able to open that we're ready to proceed as quickly as possible. Now, that doesn't mean that it's lifted at Friday at 9 o'clock and we're going to open the next day, but at least we'll have a lot of these questions answered from the board as we move ahead. So I'll just turn it over to Bobby.
Sure. Stephanie, you're probably referring to we had two surveys go out. Originally, we had sent one out just gauging people's interest with the move to phase three, where personal training was allowed. And we didn't get a lot of positive reaction to that people wanted to pay for personal training. So we kind of changed direction a little bit based on what we think might be a phase four opening. So the survey went out a couple of days ago. We had, I believe it was 42 people respond to it out of just over 200 members. The first question we asked was how comfortable you are coming back to exercise once we reopen. And we had about 50% of participants said they were extremely comfortable or very comfortable. We had just under 20 say somewhat comfortable. And then we had just under 20 say not comfortable at all. And the last almost 12 saying not at all comfortable. So kind of split down the middle, as you can imagine. So about 50% may be interested in coming back if we were opening. We also asked some questions about some of the ideas were about reopening and how we were going to handle cleaning measures and what that would look like. We had 71% say they were in favor of reducing the number of guests allowed in the fitness centers, 92% saying mandatory use of hand sanitizer before using the equipment. We only had 33% say limit or reduce the numbers of machines, which is kind of contradictory to what we were looking to do potentially to make it more manageable. We had almost 70% say use masks when entering and leaving the fitness center, and then obviously 83% said increase the cleaning protocol. So people were pretty much in favor of what we were proposing. Some of the comments on that was they want to see some people wear masks inside the fitness center. We've had somebody ask for air circulation equipment that they use in medical offices, which would be extremely expensive. Those, that comment was in there a couple of times. Some people saying the extreme opposite, this is getting overmanaged, healthy people should exercise. And then some people saying I'm pretty comfortable. So even though they're looking to get back soon. Next question. We were looking at doing a reservation system, so or a walk-in system, a walk-in option. 75% of people would like the reservation system, so you would book your slot ahead of time, probably very similar to how we did tennis. We would limit it based on what the restrictions are in a phase four or whatever we determine will be the right time to open up or the state level. We asked them about the length of time they would like to do the reservation system. Almost 70% said 60 minutes. 24% to 90 minutes, and then 7% of the time. So an hour-long workout time seems to be what people were looking for. Then we were talking about the cleaning and the custodians and gaps between the reservation slots. So looks like almost 80% approved that. So putting a 15 to 20 minute break, allowing us to clean all the equipment, bring staff in to clean all the equipment down in that period. So people seem to be in favor of that. Again, we had some comments about some UVC disinfectant equipment, which probably not feasible for the size of our fitness center. We asked people what's most important when they come back to Glencoe Fitness. Some of the responses that stood out were a limited number of people, the option to end my membership without penalty, masks during exercise, safety, cleanliness of equipment and improved air quality, plastic separation between machines, again, would be an additional cost, I will not return if I can't use shower facilities. And you had some people who were, didn't have too many concerns. And the final question we had to share some additional comments, concerns. Some people were, I'm not comfortable coming back at all. Do not want to continue. The park district should consider raising the price per month for an interim period to account for the increased cleaning protocols management. I'd rather pay more for an interim period that lasts for however long is needed, rather than be forced to pay $300 a month a lifetime. Some people were saying, please open. I look forward to coming back someday, whether it's near future or a bit further off. So kind of a mixed bag on the survey. We really would not be expecting to make money if we opened up in the near term with the restrictions and with what people suggested their comfort level was. It needs to be at least 60% of our members to return just to break even with some of the additional costs for cleaning and cleaning supplies. We would have to add a cleaning shift during the day. So we would not see it as a net revenue generator. It would be more just as a service to the community and our members.
Well, that's what we're looking at. So if you saw in the survey, we did open, we do blocks of, say, 69 minutes yet to be determined, and we would have to bring in staff to clean and clean. So it would probably be our existing fitness staff, who normally we just had in the morning working, checking in, and then we just had our front office staff just monitoring that room, but obviously they could not do the cleaning, so we have to bring in staff. So that would be a cost about, and then cost of the cleaning supplies and everything could be anywhere from $2,500 to $3,000 a month for that additional expense. If we chose to do the dividers between equipment, that would be very costly endeavor, and we're not even sure. We would have to get quotes for that, which we are trying to secure right now. So I guess before we go on to a lot of details of how we're going to run the fitness center and that's operational, the staff to figure that out, we just want to see the appetite for the board to take a picture as if it was worth opening up in, if we're able to, in phase four or phase five at a subsidy, knowing we'd have to subsidize this amenity until we're back to normal, or would it, and then provide that service to the community, or would they rather, or would you rather us not open because of additional costs and just wait till we get to, say, if I phase five, where there's less restrictions and maybe a vaccine? So that's what we're putting out there, and then we'll work on the rest of the details.
Is there a question? Is there a strong seasonality in its use? I mean, is it used nearly as much in the summer as in the winter?
Well, I would say definitely all fitness centers drop off in the summer. And I don't have the statistics to you, Adam or Bobby, but they do go off, they drop down in the summer, but a lot of people would use it more for weightlifting than maybe the cardio equipment. But then when it gets really hot, like it's gonna be 90 to 100, then we see that use go back up. They don't wanna work out, you know, run outside, so. Do you disagree, Bobby, or Adam?
I think that's accurate. From the, Adam, correct me if I'm wrong, but from the last 2 years of data, pretty significant drop off in the summer. Then we see it spike up, tends to be September, October, just after Thanksgiving really starts to pick up. And then obviously you get your traditional after the holidays, January, February time.
I don't have an answer for your question, folks, but something I would at least consider, I guess what I'm trying to say is I personally am open to being persuaded to any particular course of action, but one thing that I would look for is, or that I would think about is, maybe it's not quite as essential of a service while the weather is warm, and I don't mean that in the technical COVID way, I just mean, you know, even if we move to phase four on July 1st, maybe we can leave that closed until October 1st or November 1st just to minimize the risk to the community. Just, I'm not saying I believe that, but that occurs to me to be maybe worth considering.
I think there's probably, I mean, like you said, you only got 42 responses, which is not that many, but I think that there's probably an appetite for it because it's a smaller facility.
and it is better controlled than like a lifetime. So I could see members wanting to come back, and I think just like people going to, you know, doctors doing non-essential surgeries right now, it's people's health, so that's our mission. And I think it would serve us to try and open it for the people who would like to return.
You'd be fine subsidizing that. It maybe not put the costly barriers between them, but the additional cleaning costs as well.
I mean, I think, you know, you guys have always kept it very clean. Obviously, people would want more wiping down of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
But it's always pretty clean, and it's still, anything we do is at people's own risk. I've seen it done here, and where I am in Florida in our community, and it's done very well, and people are respectful, and they, some wear masks, some don't, they keep their distance. You know, it's kind of like whatever else we do. It is still a risk, it's at their own risk. But I do think that if people use it respectfully, which I feel like they would, why not try and offer it? I'm not saying like tomorrow, but as things open up more.
Okay. I would be comfortable looking to the fall, which may also be coincidental with another spike in COVID, but looking to the fall and kind of giving the summer a rest because it tends not to be as busy anyway. And you've got a lot of other things going on, and you don't have a building full of people that can go in there and clean the equipment. I mean, I just think that it's complicated to keep this up to a level that I think would make people very comfortable. So I could see subsidizing it, but I would like to wait until an opening time, you know, whenever it's phase four, but then still waiting until the fall.
I trust the staff on this thing. I don't think there's a right answer here, and I think there's going to be a lot of our own opinions that are going to, you know, try and sway us. I don't think there's a right answer. I don't think there's a wrong answer. So I have very little to add to this discussion.
Okay. What are you comfortable with, staff? Like, what direction would you like to take?
Sorry, I would ask one question, and I was actually looking it up as we were speaking. Are gyms open in general?
Not yet. That's what we're fully pre-planning, because there's indication, and it's, again, vague in every document that in phase four, fitness centers will be able to open, but we don't know what capacity that is. It could be, okay, fitness centers are allowed to open at 25%, which means for us, you know, it's every three machines would be open. So, I mean, there's no right answer. It's just, I guess we could make it work, but we'd be okay with subsidizing because we know there would be extra cleaning costs about it. You know, I'm not one for putting the plastic dividers between machines. I think that would be hot. It would be really hard. I'm more of, you know, we close off or do every three machines or something, so there's space between a good 6-foot distance between the people working out and allow one person in the weight area or something like that. It's more of as an option.
I'll defer to staff, who probably is much more of an expert in this than I could ever be. I'm not the greatest guy.
Okay. But staff, you're looking for approval that we would be willing to subsidize.
Correct.
So,
and that will give us, and we still may come back and say, oh, we don't think it's going to work based on whatever, but, you know, we just need to know. We know it'll cost more money to do it than our normal operations. So we're looking to say, are you okay with spending extra $2,500 conservatively a month to keep it, to open it up?
Okay. So are we in agreement that we are willing to subsidize based on staff's recommendation moving forward?
At that level, sure.
Dudley?
Yeah.
State's approval, of course.
Yes, obviously. Yes.
Yeah.
And Stephanie?
Yes, and I think we have to be prepared because if phase four comes, like they're saying, before July 4th, then our next meeting is not until after that. So,
yeah, we probably, to be honest, I'm going to be brutally honest on this one, is if they came and said we are moving to phase four, we would not be prepared to open the fitness center for at least 2 weeks after that. So we could move
it down. But I think we're, let's just be, especially abundance of clarity, I think what we are saying here at the board is we are okay, and this is what's right or wrong, we are okay with you guys subsidizing the facility up to, let's call it $2,500 when you want to open it, when the state allows it to be open.
Correct.
I think we table, I mean, I don't think we have to talk about it again.
Okay.
But there's something else that I'm missing.
Nope, I agree with you. So now
I agree.
That's the big picture direction I needed.
So now you know we're supporting it when the time comes.
Okay. Sounds good.
Okay. I have an additional concern, and that's about the air quality. I don't know that we can bring it up to the, shall we say, physician's offices level, but maybe there's something, a HEPA filter or something in there just to improve it.
Great. I can speak to that. One of the things we've done in early childhood is we've upgraded the air circulation system with effectively the best quality filter that we can buy and fit in our machine. There is additional wear and tear because the filters are not as easy for the air to pass through. The other thing that we've seen in the information we've had is that fresh air is really the best. So we may find that if, you know, the time comes to open the fitness center, that all the windows are going to be open to the outside with box fans venting the air, things like that. I mean, we're going to have to, you know, cross that bridge when we come to it. But really, the best idea right now is if you can get fresh air into your space, get fresh air into your space.
Exactly.
Which, again, we're lucky because we have windows that open.
When you come into the takeoff center.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Lisa, what's next?
Okay. Next is what I just wanted to bring you update on Park 7N and the cottage move. So I put some information in the report, but as everything, more information came in and meetings were scheduled after that went to you. So obviously with the pandemic, the timelines of moving it and communication of the structure and approval of the plan were greatly delayed. So I did get more feedback from the village who reviewing the plans for the drainage and talk to the Historical Society. So they are moving forward with dealing with the water in the park and around the structure. And it's to the point where the process is underway and the village's public works director, Dave Mao, and engineer James Hick have been working through the details with DHS. So they will be dealing with the water issues that are in the park that they knew about beforehand. And that park, that plan will be available for review once it is completed and approved by the village. So they will not be able to move that house until that plan has been approved, just like every other structure that is put up in Glen Cove. They did approach the village about additional funding. I think that was just they were trying to see if they could expand the scope. But they do have the necessary funds. As the board knows, they have presented us with the escrow that's required in the lease. So that in no way does that mean they don't have the funding. I think they were just trying to see if they could expand the scope of placement. But the village has always said, the park district has indicated to them from day one that we would not give any park district funds to the project. The village, however, did indicate, and they stated in the public meeting in February, that they would do some in-kind services for them, such as blades connecting utilities in the streets. And the board did reaffirm it, and then on the 21st, but there's no, not really cash outlay. It's done by the village employees. The Historical Society also provided more detail, and I'll give this all to you in writing also, that Park 7N is not a flood zone. There's been rumors that is the case. It is not. And they're working with us, the engineer, to address the water. In fact, a lot of the water that's being addressed by this project probably was not in our plans to address anytime in the near future. So this water pooling will be addressed with this project where it may have not have been in the past.
DHS has, like I said, has raised non-governmental funds to pay for relocation and renovation of the cottage. We're requiring them to do the site work, restoring the site work and the outside restoration, and they have the funds to do that. And then they're looking, they did some additional soil borings just to check the soil and are providing us with a site plan soon about the exact location of the cottage. And they will also, once that is done and everything's approved, stake it out so the neighbors can see that. And I've also asked them to continue to communicate with the neighbors on this situation and get their website up and running to answer any questions that they have. So I will send this in writing to you, but that's the status of that. They fulfill their end of the lease agreement as of right now. So there's nothing that would lead us to believe any other ways. So.
And Lisa, the project needs to be completed by what day from our contract?
Whenever we signed the agreement, which was it March? No, February.
Right.
So within by next February.
Okay.
And they're on track to do that.
Perfect. And they and just to for the minutes and make sure everyone understands, we do have the fiduciary, the evidence of responsibility
yes.
for finances for the $300,000. So
yes, they showed us that.
With the park district, they have met their end of the bargain so far.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Exactly. So they look like they're going to move in July now that the COVID restrictions are lifting. That kind of stopped everything. And they anticipate being finished with our requirements for the outside of the building and site restoration by this time. Okay.
Sir, should we have any concern, Lisa, that even though they showed us that they have $300,000, that they might now unexpectedly have to pay X thousand dollars more than they expected for site preparation and drainage, and that would effectively leave them with less than $300 to do $300,000 to do what we expected?
Yeah, our estimate and the village's estimate is that was enough to do the requirement of what we required. So I think they were going to the village to see if they could put a basement in, and I don't think they're going to go forward with that basement. And I can tell you for sure that they may still be raising funds. In order to put that in. So I think they were looking for additional funds to possibly put that basement in. But if they don't have those funds, they know they can't put it in.
So you think that the $300,000 is sufficient to
correct.
Address the drainage as it exists and move the cottage and fix up the exterior. However, it may not be sufficient to put in a full basement, which was never like a guarantee that they would have, or that's not something we care about. But
no care. Yeah.
If they decide that they want that, then they've got to find that money somewhere else.
Exactly. And the same with interior restoration. They may not have, they just had to show us a $300,000. They can't, they may not have to do the interior restoration right away. But again, that wasn't a concern for us. We wanted to make sure that exterior of the cottage was presentable in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, any other questions? The next one is the Hoover Estate is going to the Planning Commission. I know Dudley's our representative. I had a meeting with Phil and the village attorney and the school district about our agreement when new residents go online. I don't know if Carol's on the phone still.
I am.
So, okay, so that'll be going through the Planning Commission. So whenever there's a new property put on, there's an assessment made for future park improvement, whether it's in that neighborhood or adjoining neighborhood. So I just wanted to let you know that Hoover Estate is proceeding to the Planning Commission, and they do know that about our agreement for those funds whenever those houses are built. So anything to add on, Carol, on that one?
No, they just say that based on the timing of it, that they didn't see construction really happening until 2021, and that the monies will come in as built. So
right now, for our impact fee agreement, I believe we get $8,000 per lot, and there are now 29 lots in that subdivision. So monies will be coming in as far as impact fees. It's just it's not expected anytime soon.
Okay. And then if we move to phase four, we would recommend that we start moving to in-person meetings for our board meetings or committee meetings, if everybody feels comfortable. What we would do is we would set up those meetings in the gymnasium, because to be honest, the community hall is now used for programming, set up as a classroom right now for children's care. And we would do individual 6-foot tables for each commissioner and spread out, but be able to have a in-person meeting if we do move to phase four. So it's everybody's comfort zone. We don't have to. We can stay in having Zoom meetings after that fact, but it's up to you. But what I'll probably do is move back staff all in person to do the meetings like we did at the beginning, and then if commissioners want to Zoom, we can do that.
Okay.
I think that's all I have. Oh, 4th of July. So I'll be meeting again before the 4th of July. A press release went out on that. I believe I sent it to you. So obviously 4th of July won't be the same as it has in the past, but we will be doing our virtual fun run, the virtual talent show parade, a non-traditional parade that goes throughout town. So instead of people gathering downtown, we'll go throughout the town. So Chris, Bobby, and I will be driving a vehicle to the parade. The vehicle is yet to be determined. I'm trying to get Chris to let me drive tractor, but we'll see.
I have a license for that.
You know, I was driving tractors when I was 10 years old.
You got the right gal there.
We don't have a John Deere, so I may not do it. So.
Okay.
I'm particular. It's obviously not the same as what we used to, but we felt strongly that we wanted to do something for the community because we know it's such a tradition. So, and then obviously the beach will be open, and it may be a challenge today with a lot of, historically not a lot of people coming for daily use, but over the last 4 years, we have not allowed that, so we're prepared to turn those people away also. So.
I'd like to say that I am thrilled that I voted against after a long and lengthy discussion on advanced payment of fireworks for July 4th, many months ago. It was a tough one, but I think in hindsight we made the right decision. So
too.
So you're saying you knew about this ahead of time, Kobe.
Yeah, are you saying you had some inside information, Michael?
I warned you all.
Okay.
We're all warned.
Are there going to be any prizes for the house decorating?
No, we decided not to make it a contest. It's too subjective to who wins. There's no prizes, but what we're going to do is everybody who decorates their house, they'll submit it, and I think we're doing something virtually. Bobby, you probably talk to that.
Probably there'd be a walking list. Or a app.
I know.
We wanted to avoid crowding at different houses and yeah. being difficult, so.
I'm going to be pretty good.
Candy, but can we throw other stuff out?
We cannot throw anything out, no.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Just put any trash out that you don't want.
We really wanted to throw out gold medals, but, you know, that was my first
couple. Oh, Lisa, the whole gold medal thing had to be put on hold.
I know.
Oh, I forgot about that.
You know what? We can place them gently on people's lawns.
Yeah. We're just driving by in our vehicle, not touching anybody. No one's going to walk. We're all driving.
If you need a volunteer to drive that cool ATV that Chris has down the beach, I'm willing to help out with that.
Oh, well, that was going to be my vehicle, my second choice, so maybe.
Okay. All right. Well, you're doing the best you can with that. That's all we can ask. So
okay.
There you have it. All righty. Then, if nothing else, Lisa, are you finished?
I am.
Oh, look at that. Then, I am going to move to action items. I entertain a motion to accept the fiscal year 2019-2020 annual audit as presented.
Second.
So moved.
So moved.
Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Boren?
Yes.
Mr. Covey?
Accepted.
Mr. Ludden?
Yes.
Mr. Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes, motion passes. I entertain a motion to approve resolution number 914, authorizing benefit protection leave service for COVID-19 related furlough time as presented.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Covey?
Accept.
Commissioner Ludden?
Yes.
Commissioner Underdunk?
Yes.
Commissioner Boren?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes. As to other business, Lisa will present the information, if any.
There is no other business, and we do not have to go into executive session.
Ah, okay. Well, then. I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Do you want to get this one, Stephanie? Second.
Did we have a so moved in there?
Dudley did.
Okay. All right, roll call vote, please.
Mr. Boren?
Yes.
Mr. Covey?
Yes.
Mr. Ludden?
Yes.
Mr. Underdunk?
Yes.
President Brooks?
Yes. Motion passes.
All right. Thank you all so much for a very thoughtful conversation.